On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about Major League Baseball's lockout. Who is to blame? And will this thing get resolved? And if so, when? And why are they locked out? All these questions and more are answered next.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
I want to bring in Mike Wilner. He is a very familiar voice to radio listeners. He is also a columnist on baseball issues and stuff for the Toronto Star. He'd love having him on here. Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. I think I have a guess for your Dr. Seuss thing, but I'm not going to say it.
Well, that's good. And before you hang up, we're going to let you tell Ben, so we'll see if you get it right before we let you go. But should we not be watching a baseball spring training game tonight?
Well, to be super pedantic, no, because there aren't any spring training night games until like really late in spring. But yeah, there should have been. There should have been a full slate of Grapefruit and Cactus League games today. Absolutely. It was supposed to start on Saturday.
You know, I'm wondering if, and we'll get into some of the issues here, but I'm wondering if in the, and this is the worst possible way to say this, and so I apologize because it seems just so, I don't know, flippant or something, but if baseball is kind of getting away with this right now and people aren't as paying attention to this and aren't as ticked because of everything else going on in the world, that baseball just seems kind of unimportant right now, that they're kind of getting a pass on what's going on.
I don't think they're getting a pass. I agree that baseball is completely unimportant relative to, you know, a land war in Europe and all the other stuff that's going on. Pandemic and all that, but at the same time, you know, it's something that's on people's minds. It's something that a lot of people are very, very much committed to, for lack of a better word, and it's a distraction from all that other stuff. So, you know, when you can watch video of someone hitting a home run or getting a big strikeout or all of that, then for a second it takes your mind off all the horrible, horrible things that are happening in the world, and people need that. I don't think they're getting a pass, especially since, you know, we are at such a higher point of social media. Like, remember the last time baseball had a labor stoppage, the internet barely existed. Never mind Twitter. You know, I don't think I had my Netscape Navigator yet last time.
You hadn't got your CD-ROM yet for that one?
Exactly. I wasn't at the point where we were getting an AOL CD-ROM in the mail every 2 weeks. that's causing people to, you know, magnify stuff so much more. And it's going to get even more magnified at the beginning of April, when the people who aren't paying attention now will realize, hey, isn't this supposed to be opening day? And isn't there supposed to be baseball happening? So it's only going to get pushed into the consciousness more and more.
All right. Everybody, Mike, who is paying attention to this right now will have a villain in this story. It's billionaires being greedy. It's multimillionaires being greedy. Who do you look at and say is responsible for this? Or is it easy? Is it that easy to be able to break it down that way?
Oh, yeah, it is. And for me, it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. It's the billionaires. As much as people want to paint this as this millionaires versus billionaires fight, what's important to remember is that about 50% of the playing time in Major League Baseball last year was from people making the minimum salary. And it's the lowest minimum salary in any of the major pro sports. And I saw something today that said something like 17% of NHL roster time was made up of people making the minimum salary, 3% of it in the NBA, and like 52% in Major League Baseball. And you know, we've heard more and more through the years about how optionable players are important and how teams, you know, you can't win with 26 guys, you're really using 35. and all those guys who are shuttled up and down over the course of the season, yeah, they're making their $570,000 a year while they're on the major league roster, but that may only be a month. And then they're sent back down to the minors where they're making about 38 to 50 grand a year. So, and that's the majority of the players who are playing in the major league. There are very, 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 very few multimillionaires relative to the total amount of people who spend time in the big leagues. Most players' careers begin and end before they even make $1 million. And, you know, as much as Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, yesterday in his news conference when he announced the cancellation of a week of games, as much as he completely lied through his teeth and said that the last 5 years have been tough as far as revenue generation, look, Major League Baseball made more than $10 billion in 2019, or it might have been $10 billion in 2021 and $13 in 2019. Yeah, they might have taken a hit in 2020 with the pandemic, but they're making billions of dollars every year. And that doesn't include how franchise valuations are going through the roof, right? All of Major League Baseball franchises were worth, I want to make sure I get this right. I'm not sure that I'm getting it right, so I'm not going to say it. But I will
a
say
lot of money.
They were worth less than $100 billion 10 years ago. Now they're worth more than $300 billion. So there's so much more money available in this game, and the owners are squeezing every last nickel like their life depends on it. They're not even offering, you know, a cost of living increase to the players. It's insane that any of this is being painted as greedy players.
You know, I think it was telling of what, I'm not entirely sure, but that the owners had a proposal from the players, as I understand it, months ago and didn't respond for a long, long time. Do the owners want a delay for some kind of leverage? Is there some reason why it would benefit the owners to have this lockout?
Remember 2020 when there was a group of owners that didn't want to play at all? You know, they had this excuse of the pandemic, but baseball, remember, came back after the NHL and the NBA. And there was a group of owners that would have said, we will lose less money if we don't play at all than if we have to pay the players. And that's why they waited until the absolute last second and the shortest possible season that they thought wouldn't be a joke and wound up playing 60 games. So, yeah, there's a group of owners that will make more money if they don't have to pay their players. Remember, you know, every team gets $130 million in revenue before they sell a single ticket because of the TV deals and because of some of the revenue sharing. So, yeah, there are owners that don't want to play at all. And there are even more owners that say, well, April's a terrible month for attendance. Nobody shows up. It's the after opening day, then your crowds drop to like 10, 11,000 for most teams. So they don't care whether they play in April or not. And they're more than happy to miss the first month of the season.
You've touched on it in a lot of ways, but one of the big sticking issues here seems to be, at least the one that everyone's talking about lately, is the competitive balance tax. Explain the competitive balance tax and why the owners or the players hate this so much.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's hilarious that it's called a competitive balance tax. It's a luxury tax. And Rob Manfred pointed to it yesterday as the only thing that creates any semblance of competitive balance between the teams. What it is it basically acts as a salary cap. Right now, or at least in the 2021 season, if teams spent over $210 million in payroll, they had to pay X amount of that as a tax for breaking the threshold. And only one team did. And when you talk about that as making the playing field level among the teams, well, there were 11 out of the 30 teams in Major League Baseball that spent less than $100 million on payroll. So they weren't even thinking about approaching 210. And the players see it as a de facto salary cap because that's what it is. There are teams that very plainly, you know, good teams, teams that spend money, very plainly say, look, we're not going to spend above the CBT because we don't want to pay that tax. So it is acting as a salary cap, and there's no floor. So you have a team like the Florida Marlins with a $40 million payroll and some teams spending $210 million, and it's amazing that they can consider that to create competitive balance. But the players said, we want the competitive balance tax to be about $245 million. That's the threshold. You can spend up to that without paying any tax. The owners have offered $220 million for each of the next 3 years. The players want it to go up as with inflation and as revenues go up. Somebody wrote today that had the competitive balance tax kept pace with inflation, the threshold, that is, it would have been $297 million last year, and it was $210 million. So, you know, Rob Manfred's busy breaking his arm, patting himself on the back, because they offered $220 million, but it really is still acting as a salary cap. And basically, the purpose of it, just like the purpose of any other salary cap, is to save the owners from themselves. Because there are a few owners who really want to win and don't care how much it costs because they understand that they'll get those revenues back tenfold, if not more, when they win. And there are a bunch of owners who seem to have a pretty powerful voice who just see owning a major league team as a revenue generator. They don't care about winning. They definitely don't want to spend. And they just sort of pocket the dough, and they're happy to do that. So they don't want the Steve Cohens and the Steinbrenners and the John Henrys of the world to embarrass them by running a payroll 10 times higher than theirs.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting today. Marcus Stroman was on social media lashing out against Rob Manfred. Now, that said, Marcus Stroman is on social media every day, apparently, lashing out at somebody, so that's not really news. What was really interesting today was Mike Trout was on social media lashing out at the owners and Rob Manfred, and that never happens. And I'm wondering if when someone who doesn't speak like this ever and a guy who has the place he does in baseball starts to speak out like this, if Mike Trout, if that starts to carry any more weight with the public or even maybe with some owners or with other players who may be on the fence or whatever, when people who are silent generally and not controversial and don't use the platform like that, when they start getting involved, does it change anything?
Hopefully with the public it does, because I mean, this is, you know, we talked about the internet not existing the last time. It's a lot easier to just form this damn greedy player's opinion if you don't have any access to them. And now you have access to them and you're hearing from them. And for Mike Trout to say Rob canceled games, which is what he said on social media today, hopefully that carries a lot of weight with the fans. Although, again, today it's very, very difficult to get anybody to change their mind once they've made it up, regardless of what facts you present them. But Bob Nutting of the Pittsburgh Pirates, the owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, doesn't care that Mike Trout said that. And Artie Moreno, who owns the Angels, is a guy who's willing to spend money. So he's on Trout's side, I think. I think it's only for winning the PR battle, but it doesn't really have any effect on what any of the owners really think.
As I was reading this today, though, and again, hearing people talking about Rob Manfred, it did make me wonder, who was the last commissioner the players actually liked? Because, I mean, the players hate every commissioner, and it's mostly because the commissioner works for the owners. But when was the last time the players liked a commissioner?
It was Faye Vincent. And I don't think that's true. I think that up until 1993 or 4, when Bud Selig took over, the commissioner was employed by the owners, it's true, but the commissioner's first duty was to the game. And the commissioner could act in the best interest of baseball, which is, you know, why in 75, I think, Bowie Kuhn stopped three trades that Oakland was making when they were selling off their top players just for cash. Peter Uberoth, Bart Giamatti, Faye Vincent, they all acted in the best interests of baseball against the best interests of the owners. And that's why the owners decided, we don't want that anymore. We want someone who's works in the best interests of us making as much money as possible. And that's why they made a used car salesman their next commissioner when Bud Selig took over and oversaw the steroid era and the strike of 94, which only ended because the owners lost an unfair labor practices complaint. So, no, pre-93, it was the commissioner was a good thing.
Just before we go, you mentioned 94. That just, for people in Canada, that has such bad connotations. A, because the Jays had just finished their back-to-backs and they weren't great that year, but the Expos were probably going to win the World Series or at least very much be in contention. That season got lost. And now, you know, I don't expect that this entire season is going to be lost, but at the same time, you know, we're finally at a time when we've got a young Blue Jays team that people are getting excited about that's going to be really competitive. And here we are. It seems like every time there's a Canadian team almost that decides to get competitive, we somehow, the timing lines up that we end up in a lockout or a strike.
Look, in 1981, the Expos were arguably at the peak of that great five-year run, and there was a two-month strike. 94, the Expos were 74-40 when the strike went down. And like you said, the Jays were, I mean, they weren't contending at all, but they were coming off the back-to-backs. You're right. It's a complete coincidence, for sure, but it does suck. You know, this was going to be such a fun year for the Blue Jays. The good thing, of course, is that, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette are still 22. And, you know, Alek Manoah is still a zygote. And all these wonderful young players are so wonderful and young that even if they do miss this whole year, which I don't think is going to happen, but it's an absolute possibility. Even if they do miss this whole year, the Blue Jays are still going to be really young and really exciting next year, too. So, yeah, it's terrible timing. It's always terrible timing. I mean, even, you know, even if Josh Towers was going to be the opening day starter, it would have been terrible timing because you don't want to have a spring and maybe summer without baseball. But this is going to be a really fun year for this team. And it still might if they get their act together.
I think we got to get T-shirts made of these guys as a zygote. I think there's money to be made there. I mean, you know, there's money to be made everywhere apparently in baseball, except if you're not playing. But I think Wilner's on to something here with these zygote T-shirts for the Jays. There you go.
Listen, get it started. We'll partner up.
There you go. Hey, there's money to be made, and we can all make it, even if we don't reach the salary cap. Listen, appreciate the time, Mike. As always, thanks for doing this.
Anytime. Happy to be with you.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Time for Ben's story of the day. Ben is back at the office. He is the guy who's pressing the buttons and pulling the levers. I'm going to give Ben three unusual stories from around the world, and he will then decide which one is his favorite, which becomes Ben's story of the day. That's how that works. Beginning with this one, Ben, we are going to, this is in Georgia, where a one-year-old child who had quite a head of hair, this is a head of hair, has now been diagnosed with something called uncombable hair syndrome. It's a real thing. Uncombable hair syndrome. It is apparently a real thing. There's only 100 people in all the world who have this.
Is it exactly what it sounds like?
Children with uncombable hair syndrome, also called spun glass hair, have hair that grows in all directions, and it can be straw colored, have a dull texture, and hard to manage. It is basically, it looks like that this child looks like he has got his hand on one of those electric balls and the hair is standing up at all times.
Wow.
At all times.
That is one of those weird things where you never think of this being a disorder or something that somebody can be afflicted with. And yet here it is. They've got hair that is uncombable and hard to manage. And the thing is, it sounds kind of comical, but I can imagine this gets really problematic from a hygiene perspective. How do you wash this?
Thankfully, these days, lots of people go to walk by any high school. Lots of people have big hair now. This is a very stylish thing right now. So this kid right now is fitting in perfectly. But if the day ever comes when we get back to the days of like slick down and combed out hair, this kid's got a problem. And we'll be doing what I do, which is just shaving the noggin completely bald.
They're going to get very fast into punk music where short hair buzzed right down.
Story number two comes from Disney World, from Animal Kingdom. Disney World, the cleanest, most un-R-rated place on Earth. Well, apparently, Disney can control an awful lot of things in its parks. But when you have real animals, there's one thing you cannot control. Well, it appears that a whole bunch of people riding the Kilimanjaro safari ride the other day decided to post stuff on social media because as they were going along, there were a couple bongos that were doing the bongo and doing it hard on the Disney ride. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, animals do animal stuff. This is what happens in the animal kingdom, but not at Disney World.
Disney World is one of those places where if you want a snapshot of here's what a perfect utopian society looks like, but then you start realizing this is clearly a dystopian society with the secret tunnels and the secret police and all of that. Disney World is a perfect analog for that. And it goes to show, if you want animals, you're going to be getting more animals eventually.
I just think this is hilarious that for the rest of the day, some parents, while they were at Disney thinking, this is going to be the perfect day, had to spend the rest of the day trying to explain why the bongos were playing together.
Why do they keep trying to hike the football, Daddy?
Yeah, why were they wrestling? I didn't know bongos wrestled. Well, they do, son. That's all you need to know. Talk to your mother. Story number three. I love this one. Ukraine's National Agency for the Protection Against Corruption, which seems, best I can tell, to serve some of the same purposes as, say, Revenue Canada. When you fill out your taxes here, you have to. So, if you were to get a capital gain here, you would have to put that on your taxes. I received some enormous gift or something, or I acquired some capital gain, therefore I must claim it. Well, Ukraine's National Agency for the Protection Against Corruption has put out a statement to its citizens, to the citizens of Ukraine today, to clear some things up about their tax system. Here it is. Have you captured a Russian tank or armored personnel carrier and are worried about how to declare it? There is no need to declare the captured Russian tanks and other equipment because the cost of this does not exceed 100 living wages. Yeah, so if you are over there and a Russian tank has broken down or run out of fuel or whatever else in the convoy and you drive it away and put it in your house somewhere, whew, lucky you, that will not be taxable.
But to be fair, they got to clarify this.
I love that, you know, and again, like small things that you look for as light moments in the middle of this difficult, difficult time. I love that they thought in the middle of a war, we have to clarify our taxation system for people because, you know, someone who's grabbed a Russian tank away from a bunch of Russian soldiers, the first thing they're going to be concerned about is whether or not this has to come on my taxes.
Well, I mean, to be fair, there isn't usually a box that fills in, yes, I have acquired an Mi-24 Hind helicopter featuring, you know, 72 rockets.
The 2023 taxes will probably have that to be filled in. There'll be an extra box there for Russian artillery.
Have you recently acquired military-grade ordnance?
Please claim and guess how much it's going to be. All right. Will your story of the day today be the uncombable hair syndrome boy? Will it be the bongos at Animal Kingdom who were wrestling? Or will it be the Ukrainian non-claiming tax purposes for Russian military gear?
I love that the Ukrainian tax system has officially put a stance on, nope, military-grade weapons and vehicles from the Russian military. You don't need to worry about it. You're all clear.
They're yours. They're yours.
Merry Christmas.
Exactly. I like that one, too. And good for them for... hard to know if they were being entirely tongue-in-cheek. I have to believe so, but who knows if they can be tongue-in-cheek when this is going on. But either way, you are now clear. If you're Ukrainian, if you're over there listening to us in Kyiv, and you get a tank, it is yours. So keep it.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.